You're listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast with your hosts, Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to the first Soccer Report Extra podcast of 2012. Happy New Year to all our listeners. Happy New Year to you, Owen. Happy New Year to you, producer Luke.
Happy New Year, Yoko.
I am, in fact, Bobby McMahon. Alongside me is Owen O'Callaghan, and the controls we have producer Luke Crawford. We continue our look at the top 20 news stories of 2011, and we follow up last week's 20 through 11, or 11 through 20, with our top 10. Numero 10, as they say.
That was a real Alan Partridge moment there.
The Hillsborough documents are to be released, finally, after years and years and years and years of contentious
wranglings,
petitions, arguments,
parliament debates,
columns. Yeah, it goes on and on and on. Finally, the new government in Britain has agreed to release the documents to the inquiry, independent inquiry.
Not to kind of overstate this, but this is monumental for so many people. Liverpool fans get a bad rep sometimes, but this particular moment will go down in football history as one of the worst. And not just during the moment and as the moment unfolded, but what happened in the immediate aftermath.
It was a spin and the context of the time, wasn't it? England's renowned, or I don't think renowned is necessarily the right word, but certainly the throes of a hooliganism era that was just awful.
Mm.
And so the context of that, and Thatcher at that time trying to put pass cards in place for fans who wanted to attend games, and then Hillsborough happened, and suddenly it becomes a vehicle for political ends rather than actually find out what happened.
Worth pointing out as well to listeners who may not be aware, but Hillsborough happened in 1989.
Yeah,
the documents are being released in 2012, I would imagine.
Yeah, over two decades of waiting to find out what actually happened. I think there's a sense that the inadequacies of the police response and what the police allowed to happen that day, I think we know what we're going to find out from the documents is more detail around cabinet documents in particular, and some of the stuff that we haven't found out yet. So finally, the people who've been fighting for so many years for answers, hopefully in 2012, we'll get these answers. Number 9.
We're going to come to FIFA in more depth
as we
later on.
Yes.
Chuck Blazer is a name who really, I suppose, achieved a sense of notoriety in 2011 as a whistleblower. The guy who was the advocate for change. And then he stepped down as head of CONCACAF.
Got caught in a bit of a cyclone, didn't he? At the same time, obviously, he knew where the bodies were buried, but a lot of the bodies also knew where his bodies were buried. And there's some leaks to the press around the money he'd made from commissions, negotiating deals for CONCACAF. And eventually, I think it just got to the point where he had to go. And he did.
What does this mean for CONCACAF and for the organisation?
Well, I think it's an incredibly interesting dynamic around the interests of the Caribbean Football Union, who have dominated CONCACAF and realised that they could hold sway there and the power that was held there. The position of Mexico and the United States, who from a population and a commercial point of view are very much the dominant partners in CONCACAF, but have been somewhat isolated during these years as well. So it's going to make for an interesting election when the election eventually comes around for the next president of CONCACAF. And it looks like Ted Howard, the point we're doing this podcast is on, is going to be Chuck Blazer's replacement. He's been, I believe, assistant general secretary of CONCACAF for some years. So things will change. Things did change in CONCACAF in 2011. And no doubt we'll see more changes come 2012. Number 8 Inter Milan, European or UEFA Champions League winners, 2010. But what happened to them in 2011?
First thing they did was...
We should add here, they went into 2011 as World Club Champions.
Yes, they did.
We forget that.
And a trophy won by Rafa Benitez.
Yes, just before he was fired.
Funny how things work out.
Yes, he was then replaced by...
Then he went on to a great career as a blogger.
Yes, writes very well.
He does.
Yeah, makes some good points.
But it looks as though there's been some rumours that he will be coming back to management sooner rather than later.
Any place in particular?
Just throwing that out there.
Okay, starting the rumour?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So he went. Who came in his place?
Yeah, Giampiero Gasperini came. No, sorry.
No, back up there, boy.
Whoa. Leonardo decided.
Yes.
AC Milan boy. AC Milan coach.
Who we already covered in the last podcast because he went to PSG.
Yes. He decided, I'll go to Inter.
Because he'd already been kicked out of AC Milan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because as a manager at AC Milan, you do that well.
Yeah.
Went to Inter. And they went on a great run.
Yeah.
He got them back on a even keel.
Mm-hmm. But
he was always a short-term thing.
Yes. Who'd they get knocked out by in the Champions League? Can you remember?
Schalke.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't just get knocked out. They got thumped.
In Germany, it was...
And they got thumped at the San Siro as well, didn't they?
Yes, I do believe.
I think they lost both of them.
Yeah.
In fact, they did lose both of them.
That was humiliating, obviously.
It was.
I think it was at that time that it was decided that Leonardo was going to be gone once the season finished. But he got them Champions League qualification and then went off to pastures new.
Yes.
To be replaced by?
Gasperini.
There you go.
The most ill-fitting appointment possibly of the decade, not just of the year.
There's a lot of head-scratching when this appointment was made, wasn't there?
I think they were interested in Bielsa as well. Before he went to Athletic Bilbao.
How would Bielsa have done? Better?
Exactly. Exactly the same. Yeah. They're both cut from the same cloth and they're inheriting an aged squad.
Gasperini.
Yeah.
Gasperini had trouble implementing his system.
Yes, it happens when you try and play a back three with cart horses.
Lucio, we need you to
cart horses that aren't particularly quick.
Not that, Lucio, come back! Don't. Oh, he's gone. He's gone. Just leave him. Just let him off.
There's certain managers, and I think Gasperini is one of them, that just need to be in a different environment. They need to be in an environment of taking a lower level club and building their system and applying their system.
He left Wesley Sneijder out of the starting 11 on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, we haven't seen too much of Wesley Sneijder in 2011, though, did we?
No, it's been a particularly torrid time for him.
So you wonder, he could have, if Ferguson had given in, Manchester United had given in to all the demands to sign Wesley Sneijder, Wesley Sneijder could have been sitting in the Manchester United medical room instead of the Inter Milan medical room all season.
And I think probably having a chat, having a cup of tea with Darren Fletcher.
Fortunate one as well.
Tom Cleverley.
So anyway, Gasperini arrived. Gasperini
left in a hurry.
And now we've got...
Claudius. Well, him Claudius. And him Claudio.
Claudio. Ranieri.
Friendly.
That was Italian.
Friendly face. It was good. Friendly face.
Has been around.
Chirpy demeanour. I like him best when he's struggling to speak English rather than fluent Italian.
Okay, let's
the chirpiness
through.
Comes
How many... How, can you remember Ranieri's clubs? Many can you
remember? He's done the Juve, Roma, Inter, so now he just needs the Milan.
Don't think he's going to get that. Did Parma. So.
Did Valencia.
Did Atletico Madrid.
Did Chelsea.
There we go. That's not bad. There's a few more in there. Producer Luca's looking up the Tinker Man. I hate that reference. Did he do Lazio? I don't think he did Lazio.
Or am I thinking...
You're thinking of Mancini. Here we go.
Calgary.
Napoli. He was at Napoli as well, wasn't he? Yeah.
Napoli. Fiorentina.
Yeah, keep going.
Valencia.
Keep going.
Atletico Madrid.
Keep going.
Chelsea.
Keep going.
Valencia.
Keep going.
Parma.
Keep going.
Juve.
Keep going.
Roma.
Keep going.
Inter.
He didn't do
there
Lazio.
There we go.
It's a clarification there.
There we go. Which takes us to number 7.
Major League Soccer time.
Yes. People sitting out there going, I haven't thought about Major League Soccer yet.
Let's give a bit of praise to Major League Soccer, shall we?
It wasn't a bad year.
It's a good year. It's a good year all around.
Two teams entering in the Northwest.
Yep.
Both well received. Yep. One more successful than the other.
Certainly.
Fans getting behind them. But once again, I think certainly a league that continues to be on a positive trajectory.
Congratulations.
Portland Timbers and Vancouver Whitecaps.
Exactly.
Whitecaps got more work to do.
Sure. They've got a new coach now.
They do.
Martin Rennie. Got a new assistant coach.
Yeah.
Two guys you're very excited about.
Paul Ritchie.
Yeah.
Martin Rennie. And they haven't got a president. President left. But.
Well, their
presidents don't score goals, do they?
Their Cho left.
Their Cho?
Their Cho. Their CEO.
Oh, okay. He was a president as well, though, wasn't he?
Well, Big Bob is a president.
Is he? Okay. Anyway, Portland Timbers and Vancouver Whitecaps came in. Portland Timbers, just incredible, incredible atmosphere at that stadium.
Best moment of the season for me, their defeat of the LA Galaxy.
That was a good game. Was that 3-0 one, I think? That was a good game. If I'm not mistaken, it was a Thursday night game?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, certainly midweek.
And there was nothing else on.
Yeah.
So you go, it's a game on Thursday night. I'm watching that.
Stick it on. HD. Stadium looked beautiful.
Yeah.
Fans out in force. Brilliant atmosphere.
Yeah.
Your home team goes out, sticks it to the Galaxy. Their Galaxy collection of superstars.
Yeah.
And the underdogs pick up a 3-0 victory. And
that was great. It was an excellent game. Whitecaps, of course, had a great start to the season, beating Toronto FC 4-2 in the opening game at Empire Stadium. By the time the season finished, it hadn't turned out quite so well for Vancouver. They finished up bottom of the Western Conference. But they had moved
coach.
Changed coach, but they'd moved into much nicer digs.
That's true. A lot. Less history, perhaps, than Empire Field.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think that was... Now, was that not the site for... We're going to go off on a tangent here. Empire Field or Empire Stadium was where they had the mile race in the 1954 Commonwealth Games, I think. Where producer looks off after this again.
I like the way that you're throwing this at me.
Do you not know this? Were you not around? I wasn't even around then.
It's 1954.
Yeah, it was a classic. I think it would be 54. Yeah, 52 was an Olympic, so 54 would be Commonwealth Games. And Roger Bannister, I think, was in it. Here we go.
Vancouver's four-minute miracle mile.
There we go.
1954, Vancouver's Empire Stadium. 35,000 spectators.
Yeah.
Roger Bannister.
Congratulations to you for that reference.
Who else was in the race, producer Luke?
Who else knows that reference, Luke?
Nobody
else. Good stuff, as I thought. We get it
I think there's a book done about that, actually.
Bannister went toe-to-toe against his rival, fellow four-minute mile breaker, Australian John Landy.
Yeah. Famous race. I'm surprised you didn't know about that.
My grasp on the historical...
So, well, you're the one that brought... You
of,
won up, you,
of athletics.
You brought it? Up the history. I just worked off the history.
Yeah, what
you
said,
historical.
There was more history at Empire Field than there is at BC.
And then I thought that was a segue to open up the discussion of a...
Yeah. No, and it did. A very, very interesting discussion, it must be said.
Number 6.
Speaking of stuff that I can't remember...
How many days was it over? Was it 22?
28, I think it was 22 maybe.
22 days in April? Four times we had El Clasico.
Was it 22 days in April? Was it all in April, or was it contained at the end of March as well?
We're going to say it's April. Probably wrong.
Because 22 days of April would be a brilliant title for the book that should be written about this.
Okay. Maybe next year we'll have written the book.
We're talking about Real Madrid against Barcelona.
It was. One after another. It was exhausting. Absolutely exhausting. And we went from...
privilege.
Yes.
Just sometimes now, stuff happens
so
one, and you're like...
One, just to recap, one was league.
Yep.
One was Copa del Rey.
Yep.
And there was a...
Copa del Rey final.
Final. And there was also Champions League as well. Two legs. Barcelona won.
Semi-final.
Barcelona won two of them?
Two of them. One drawn. One from Madrid.
And the Ronaldo header in the Copa del Rey final. In extra time.
So that Ronaldo doesn't do it in the big games.
That was the bonus feature, wasn't it? Going in extra time.
Well, you always want these games to go into extra time, added time, anything that gives us more.
We want more.
We do, because it's just... This is... We've said this before on a podcast, but it's truly a pleasure to witness two teams, such contrasting teams, such contrasting styles, kind of duel it out. But interesting that somebody brought it up in the kind of last few weeks of December, in that Mourinho has now tried everything.
He has tried. He's a little bit. He's tried rope-a-dope.
He's tried knocking them out.
Yeah.
He's tried
jabbing and weaving.
He's tried, you know, blocking off their midfield. He's tried just playing their own game, and none of it's worked.
Psychologically, it must be the point where you've got to think it's maybe having an effect.
Well, what funny you should say that, because in studio on one of the shows we did a couple of weeks ago on the Fox Soccer Report, Jose Mourinho popped up on our screens in a press conference in Madrid, and I commented to you, He doesn't look as fresh-faced as when he was in the Premier League or in Italy.
He's got a lot more sprinkles in that hair, doesn't he?
He just looks a little bit worn out. Now, you could argue that his demeanour just always looks as if it's worn out. And as he's sitting there looking at what he considers imbeciles asking pointless questions, you know, that kind of, essentially, that sort of attitude comes through. But certainly, he looks as if he's gone a couple of rounds with the guy who's shown him a thing or two. And it shows no signs of improving for him.
Well, I think he's just got to keep on going, doesn't he? He has no other option. Just got to hope that he gets Barcelona on a day where he's going to beat them in a big game. And that can happen. It could be the Champions League final in 2012 if they avoid each other.
Hopefully they will do.
Just got to keep on bouncing back.
But, yeah, 4 days of April. You heard it here first.
Four games in April.
That's up to the publishers.
4 days, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, that could work too. Number five. Bob Bradley sacked. Jurgen Klinsmann appointed as USA national team coach. And then Bob Bradley goes to Egypt. What'd you make of this, Owen?
For listeners, I'm now scratching my head to illustrate exactly what I felt when Bob Bradley moved to Egypt.
Do you want sound effects?
Go on, do it. Can we copyright that Velcro? Is that just, we could release it if people want to buy it as a ringtone.
Now, we're of course thinking that actually that's been picked up. Might not be picked up.
What we'll do is we'll do a special recording of it. And then, yeah, just so it's maximized. Yeah, this was our most downloaded podcast. No, what was the Bob Bradley Jurgen Klinsmann podcast?
It was a big one.
Thousands, lots of reaction.
Thousands.
Yeah, lots of reaction. People going crazy. It still seems to be quite a grey area. Klinsmann appointment, has it been good? Oh, we can't judge yet. We can only judge when it's World Cup qualifiers. Yeah, but even then, can you judge? Well, probably not. We'll just have to wait for the next World Cup. You know, was Bob Bradley crap? Well, he had taken us as far as we can go. Klinsmann will take us to the next level. Okay, why was he sacked? Well, because we were crap. Well, you got to the round 16 in the World Cup. Is that not good enough? Does that mean Klinsmann has to get
into quarterfinal? Yeah, we didn't play very attacking football. I don't think Klinsmann's played attacking football either.
So there's still lots of
there is. This one is got a long time to run, doesn't it?
Mm.
Wouldn't it be interesting? Wouldn't it be something if Bob Bradley took Egypt to the World Cup finals?
Where they're drawn in the group stage against the United States.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Or in the knockout stages as both teams get through and they knock him out.
And, of course, there's always a possibility both of them could get sacked and then we would be looking at Sven Gordon Eriksson.
Or would you throw your hat in the ring? US men's national team job?
Oh, that's a hard one, Owen. You know something? Not a hope.
Really? I reckon you should send your resume.
Think so?
Yeah.
Could you be my assistant?
I'd love it.
Can you do a German accent?
Well, what I could do is I could do my kind of Jurgen Klinsmann accent. Myself and Teddy Sheringham.
This is a long way around to get into this, wasn't it?
We had, back in the days when we played for the Tottenham Hotspurs, when I joined, I did this thing where people accused me of being a diver, and I was not. I wasn't a diver. I would be tackled and would go down, and people accused me of diving and cheating. And so Teddy Sheringham came to me and he said in the dressing room before the game, wouldn't it be hilarious if we did a dive after I scored the goal? It was so funny. And I said, said, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And so I scored and we did it. And it was hilarious. It was the most funny thing I'd ever seen in my life. And then it was just, oh, it's so funny. Teddy Sheringham, just hilarious guy. So well done, Teddy. I love you. You're great. Fantastic.
Number four. And this is, I believe, is actually closely connected to number five. Mexico, winners of the Gold Cup. Under-17s, they won when they hosted as well. And they got the semi-finals of the under-20s. You got to think Mexico were the country of the year as far as football is concerned.
Mainly because of James Taylor's song about Mexico.
Which was called?
Sounds so simple, I just have to go. Mexico.
That was the title, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it?
It was Mexico. Brilliantly simple, straightforward.
Just does exactly what it says on the tin.
You remember that one?
I don't remember it, obviously, but I have experienced it in later years, subsequently.
But how much, like that, you know, that this is my kind of theory, that the reason they jumped ship and went for Klinsmann was because Mexico's actually showing signs of building another, I was going to say powerhouse, but actually building a system and producing players like we quite frankly have never seen in CONCACAF.
No. Well, you always get back to the Gold Cup final.
Yeah.
That contrast.
2-0 up.
2-0 up.
Yeah, lost 4.
You know, in many ways, an unassailable lead. You're in a final.
Except it was up. Saleable.
It was saleable. You went there.
Yeah.
Guys like Guillermo Franco, the German-Austrian white man.
Former Spanish dictator.
Yes.
Guillermo Franco.
Guillermo Franco and Giovanni Dos Santos. It's just, the US just don't have players like that.
Yeah.
Just culturally, traditionally, they don't produce them. And the Dos Santos goal. US don't score goals like that.
Yeah, it was the pace of the team, wasn't it? It was overall incredible pace. Pressing team as well. A team that hadn't done particularly well in 2010 at the World Cup.
No.
Perhaps arguably drawn in a little bit of harder section. There again, maybe not with South Africa and France and Uruguay.
And also, I mean, I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, Franco struggling that season with West Ham.
Yeah.
Dos Santos on the fringes at Spurs. Yeah. These guys
still on the fringes at Spurs.
Still on the fringes with that stupid hair.
Think we're going to get Harry Redknapp?
No, I won't do it. But and you gone for goal yet, me? Join the fucking reserves. Sorry, Harry. I just asked you about what. Harry, last few days of the transfer window, you know, he's a bit of a wheeler dealer. You, I'm not a fucking wheeler dealer. Oh, just fuck off.
I'm a
football manager.
Manager.
Yeah, of course you are. In your dreams, pal. Sorry, Mexico.
So I don't think any country had a better 2011 than Mexico, did they? even the women's team didn't do too badly.
They didn't. And it's worth pointing out, the under-20s were semi-finalists in the under-20 World Cup, and under-17s won it.
That was a good tournament from what we saw. We didn't see all of it, but it saw good chunks of it. And the under-20s was a pretty good tournament too. That was in Colombia about August.
Yes. God, it sounds so far back when you're thinking about it. But again, do you see it happening for the United States though? Because surely you cannot just flick the switch and start producing.
No, that's why
style of play and the players.
10 years down the road,
even 10 years though.
That's what you've got to be aiming for. It's not going to happen before that.
And also worth pointing out,
change. Although there was, I think there was it the under-17s that put on had a good tournament lately.
Well, that's what you're hoping for, isn't it? That at that under-17, under-20 level that, you know, 4 years, over the next 4-8 years, that you can see them competing semi-finals, maybe get to a final and get a bit of a conveyor belt going of talent.
Number three. Most enjoyable tournament this summer.
Well, everyone complaining.
Women's World Cup.
In 2011.
There's final tournament on.
And then you started listing them. You're like, there's about 18 tournaments. Remember, we were in the summer covering it, trying to cover everything.
Everything. It was
European Championships under 21 going on.
It was bizarre. It was just coming at one after another and trying to keep up with it and made it incredibly difficult to. Because so many, you look at under 17s, under 20s, realistically, you don't know half of these players. No. You don't know 90% of these players.
Yeah. Because a lot of them are still playing at kind of a local level in their respective countries. Yeah. A few of them would be notable stars, maybe in Europe, but outside of that, Women's World Cup comes along. Yeah. And it was thoroughly enjoyable.
It was fantastic. Mm. It was started off with Canada losing to Germany 2-1. And maybe...
with quite a broken nose featuring in that game.
Christine Sinclair, who went on to be the Canadian Women's Player of the Year.
Christine Sinclair doing her best Mick McCarthy impression.
Yeah.
When she looks at you straight on, her nose is at about 9 o'clock.
But Canada got a lot of credit for that first result against Germany. But as the tournament went on, realised that that was a bit of a false dawn because Canada did not do well in the other two games. They lost out to France and Nigeria, went out early, and Germany went out in the knockout stage to Japan. The same stage, United States a little bit, a stuttering performance early on, and were within literally your referee's whistle of going out to Brazil in the quarterfinals.
What I will remember from this particular tournament, the French players getting their kits off to get a bit of publicity for the Women's World Cup. Credit to them.
Was that a French team or French players? It wasn't the French team.
French players. There's a quartet. You don't want all of them there because obviously if there's four, well then just four
keep,
best.
Keep on going.
Anyway. Alex Morgan. Credit where it's due. From a completely playing perspective, of course. I don't know what you're laughing at. That pink headband, superb. Scored in the final, of course.
She did.
Open the scoring.
Which brings us to the team we really should be talking about in terms of the Women's World Cup, was Japan.
Amazing story.
Was. National disaster just before it.
And the kind of soccer landscape kind of destroyed. J-League was put back and it was just, nobody was obviously interested in taking part in any sport, obviously because of the scale of the disaster.
They put Germany out in the last eight, extra time goal. Found their way into the final. I think they beat Sweden in the semi-final, if I'm not mistaken. Played the United States. The United States very much the favourite, and as they should have been. But Japan just did not know how to lose.
No, it went to penalties.
Yeah.
And I remember it's...
And very late as well. Very late equaliser.
And it's worth pointing out that something that you said when we were discussing the Women's World Cup final at the time, the differences... in both teams after extra, or sorry, at the end of normal time as extra time started, that the Japanese players were congratulating themselves, patting themselves on the back,
very positive,
just so happy to have got the game into extra time. The coach joking with the players, saying, "Hey, listen, you've done amazingly well to get this far." On the other side of it,
taking
a lot of tension on the
taking
US
the pressure
side.
Off the players,
exactly. And it was at that moment that you kind of looked at both sides and went, "If there's one team you fancy here, just mentally, have to be the Japanese." And as it turned out, a lot of focus on Hope Solo being a goal for the US for the penalty shootout. Obviously brings with her a sense of notoriety, and maybe she's, well, arguably the most high-profile player playing the game in the women's game now.
I think you'd still go Abby Wambach.
One of the most high-profile women playing the game. But she couldn't get near any of them.
No.
And Japan crowned Women's World Cup champion.
Fantastic achievement. A tournament that was embraced by TV audiences around the world. Certainly embraced by German soccer fans. Who
terrific attendances.
Fantastic attendances. And set a bar pretty high for Canada to match in 2015. Mm. Not long.
It's not long.
No, it's not
I'll
long
be
at all.
Waiting with bated breath.
It'll be here before. And we've got Olympic qualifiers coming up in 2012.
Does that mean that Alex Morgan will be?
In Vancouver.
Be in Vancouver.
I think the US is in Vancouver. Yeah.
Should be hanging around there. Yeah.
There you go.
That's no, it's just...
Owen trying to wangle a trip to Vancouver in January.
It's a long-term thing.
Number two, back to the Caribbean Football Unions. This is the runner-up for the Newsmaker of the Year. Jack Warner walks, Bin Haman banned for life, and all involved in the Caribbean Football Union bribery scandal. All part of the run-up to the FIFA presidential election. They have a little party or get-together. And the famous brown envelopes.
Brown
has
manila
to be brown. Has to be.
Envelope.
Yeah.
The newspaper reports that's how were you get, definite about that. It was that's a brown how you get manila
paid.
Envelope.
That's how you get paid now, isn't it? That's part of your contract?
It's a bit of a cliche. Like, if I was bribing somebody.
A money bag. With,
with the dollar sign. Dollar sign. It has to be green.
You have to be wearing a monocle when you
buy it. You know, just, what else could you put the money in? Yeah. I don't know.
But it all went, obviously, there's a pivotal moment in terms of FIFA history, but pivotal moment, I think, ultimately for CONCACAF as well. Jack Warner, who has ruled this area of the world as far as soccer organisations concerned since early 80s, nearly 30 years, who understood the dynamic, certainly the political dynamic, made himself out to be, whether we believe or not, the kingmaker, both at FIFA and for World Cup bids, finds himself walking the plank before he got pushed.
You know what's just coming to my mind?
That was a couple of metaphors, cliches, yeah.
People will understand.
They'll get it? Okay.
Or else they'll laugh at you, one or the other.
Oh, well, they do that anyway.
Here's a theory that's just entered my thoughts about Bin Hammam. Godfather Part 2. I'm referring to the scene, the infamous scene, where Michael Corleone,
the kiss,
goes over to his brother Fredo and kisses him. Says, I know it was you.
Is that not The Hobbit, Fredo? We're not getting movies mixed
kissing
up.
Kissing a Hobbit.
Oh, we're back to Stephen Hunt.
In the context
of Bin Hammam.
Sepp Blatter. Actually, no, the Sepp Blatter and Jack Warner relationship.
Okay.
Jack Warner, a friend of Blatter's. An ally of Blatter's.
Very much an ally.
Part of the family.
Which comes back to the Chuck Blazer piece as well.
Yes.
A capo.
Yes. At the moment where he's looking for support, Sepp Blatter has to go.
So why did...
You know, Jack?
We still...
I'm going to put you out on a boat in a lake and someone's going to shoot you in the head. For anyone who hasn't seen Godfather Part 2, apologies for ruining it.
Or 3. The question has never really been, I don't think it's actually been asked, let alone answered. What was he thinking? We're not talking about big money here.
Everyone, if you could put $20 in an envelope.
Well, it's more than $20, but in terms of, the why did Warner turn on Blatter? More money in it down the road?
What's awaiting Jack Warner in Qatar?
Okay. The money, so it wasn't the money that went to maybe some of the members.
Maybe
it's not money. Now watch what we're saying now. Remember, legally responsible.
Remember, just some people careful. Are listening
yeah,
to this.
Yeah, some people do listen and these things get around. But it's a good point. It's maybe the secret is it's beyond what the money that was offered to some Caribbean Football Union members.
Surely it's beyond football. You know, it has to be.
Beyond the pitch. Another podcast.
Hey. Quick shout out for them. Hello, yeah. Guys.
Hi, guys.
Which
leads us to the number one.
It feels a bit like Barbara Walters, Fascinating People of the Year.
Did you see that?
Why do they produce that in 1983? Every year they do it.
As John Stewart says, isn't it amazing? She always gets her top 10.
Also, you know, she presents it.
It's almost like it was planned.
With the most horrible green screen. It's just, hello, welcome to my list of 10 favourite people.
Did you see the one world. A couple of weeks ago when she was interviewing Herman Cain? When no. She asked him.
Did he try to sleep with her?
It was John Stewart had a piece on The Daily Show. So Barbara Walters, the cat has just appeared.
Sorry, there's a cat. There's a cat just after wandering in here. Sorry about that.
Anyway, back to the Barbara Walters interviewing Herman Cain and asking if he'd be interested in any cabinet post. And what it would be, and it came up, he said, Minister of or Secretary of State for Defence. And her reaction was, what? It was a classic one. Barbara Walters, Mrs. Unflappable. What?
Well, Herman Cain has a thing for secretaries.
Anyway, number one. Are you going to do the drum roll?
Hang on a second. We're going to get this right.
We were thinking of bringing Charlie Watt in.
Sepp Blatter!
For those who didn't hear, Sepp Blatter.
Sepp Blatter is
our number one newsmaker of the year. So why Sepp? We have three reasons. Number one, because he's Sepp. Number two, racism comments. And number three, returned unopposed as FIFA president for another 4 years.
This has to go down as his...
swan song?
Swan song is an interesting term. Yeah. It would denote that this is the last that we'll ever see of Sepp Blatter. Which should kind of be a little bit sad. Because you get used to the pantomime.
The dysfunctionality.
My God. Because this is the governing body. These are the guys that get in a room and make decisions that are then passed down to every league that we watch. And they're made by people like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of staggering.
Well, it's got to be the greatest game in the world to survive people like that.
Isn't it? What this all represents to me is, like, at this moment in time, so Blatter's had the year that he's had. But you have...
What was it the Queen said? Was it Anus Horribilis?
Anus Horribilis.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
I think it's on par with that one?
I think it would be anus, not anus.
Oh. I don't know.
Anus
it really has been a terrible year.
Anus Horribilis is what Darren Fletcher is going through at the moment.
Too soon.
I think we'll have to clean that one up. Anyway, back to Sepp.
Yes, Sepp's had the year he's had. You've got Joe Havelange in his early 90s. Still stepping down from committees for fear of retribution.
At that age, you actually step down? You kind of fall down, stumble down from a committee.
Down. You've got Ricardo Teixeira in Brazil, but hanging
then,
on.
But the interesting thing is these guys are stepping down, not because of FIFA, but because of the IOC.
That's true.
That's maybe the most interesting thing that comes out of this last year, is how far... There was a lot of discussion about, well, sponsors will push FIFA into change. The fans will push FIFA into change. The media will push FIFA into change. Yeah, and the media lasts their attention span of about two days, and then they're off to
something.
Look,
Balotelli's done something.
Oh, let's all go talk. He's Santa Claus.
Hey.
That's much more important. Let's run with that one. Drop the dead donkey. But maybe the long-term effect is going to be IOC, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, that is actually going to push FIFA into change.
Maybe it is. Is it ever going to change?
Well, the IOC, if FIFA will be pushed as far as the IOC are willing to push themselves, because you're not going to be able to have the IOC taking the steps they take to try and uncover corruption and allow FIFA to operate the same way they do. Now, how SEPs... committee of honourable people, or whatever it was called, Blue Ribbon Committee or something. What was it called?
The League of Extraordinary
Gentlemen. Yeah. Was Sean Connery on that?
Okay.
Was he appointed? And if not, why not?
Well, and Sean Connery is there alongside Placido Domingo.
As Alan Quarterman, though.
Obviously. I mean,
he's a real person.
Well, yeah, duh. He was in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You don't get the reference, it.
He's in Mr. Money Page.
Favorite ever Sean Connery moment. We mentioned this in the office the other day. He's in The Rock with Nicolas Cage. But he's in The Rock with Nicolas Cage. He comes out with the best line ever.
That was Vyas Bose again.
No, it wasn't. It's totally different. There's a bit of crossover in some of the impressions. But yeah, so he's in The Rock and with Nicolas Cage. He comes out with this amazing line. I thought about it earlier this season. About Arsene Wenger, because Arsene Wenger was talking earlier in the season about how, listen, lay off my team, they're only doing the best they can.
Okay.
Sean Connery in The Rock comes out with,
okay,
losers are always moaning about the best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
And on that note, Sepp Blatter, our newsmaker of the year. Thank you for listening to our Soccer Report Extra podcast. We'll be back next week. On behalf of myself, Bobby McMahon, Owen O'Callaghan, and producer Luke Crawford, thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. Until the next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. Make sure you never miss another episode. Subscribe through iTunes or listen on your mobile device on demand with Stitcher. For more great soccer news, highlights, and analysis, watch the Fox Soccer Report every night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer and Fox Sports World Canada. Be sure to check out SoccerReportExtra.com daily for previews, opinions, and reviews. Music for this production provided by 2 Cent Bridge.
During a match, you may make a movement to somebody, towards somebody, or you may say something to somebody who is not exactly looking like you. But at the end of the match, it's forgotten, because this is in the this is not racism. Is if there are spectators or outside the field of play, there are movements of discrimination. But on the field of play, I deny that there is racism.
So if it happens on the field, you don't necessarily think this is a matter for police and investigations and football associations.
Well, where it happened, and if it is in a league, then they have to make this investigation, and then they come to a solution. And what would they say? They bring the two people together and they say, shake hands.